All right, welcome, welcome, welcome back. All right. I am your host and your librarian, Joe Pasculo, and I want to thank you again for tuning in. This is Manga Monthly. It is March 2nd, and we are recording from New York. I hope you guys are doing well. I know the news headlines haven't been the jolliest of late. I know that the coronavirus is kind of dominating headlines here, definitely overseas as well. Japan recently made the decision in Hokkaido to cancel school, so that's a big controversial decision over there. I know that a lot of working parents are probably going to be inconvenienced, so that's happening. They're also trying to minimize any kind of large gathering whatsoever. I know they've canceled certain anime events, fashion shows I read, rugby, the sumo matches are going to be held without spectators. The Nippon Professional Baseball League over there, that's the Japanese baseball, they are currently in the middle of spring training, and they're holding all these exhibition games without spectators as well. Don't know if opening day is going to be pushed back over there. It's something that they're keeping an eye on. So it's tough. You know, a lot of germs. This is really running rampant. We don't want it to turn into something like the plague. So please just wash your hands, use Purell, do whatever you can to minimize germs. Don't touch your face and just try to be careful out there. You know, I know it's difficult. Don't want to be a total downer this episode, obviously. Do want to talk about some happy things. My friend and I, earlier this month, we went to see Masaki Yuasa's new film. That is called Ride Your Wave. He directed it. It was amazing. I loved it. I loved the music. Loved the story. Definitely, if you're looking for a good anime film to watch, that was really good. Yuasa's got a lot of stuff under his belt that's pretty good. I know he directed Ping Pong the Animation, which was pretty entertaining. He directed Devilman Crybaby, Night is Short, Walk on Girl, Lou Over the Wall. So this is just another notch on his belt. I thought it was phenomenal. But we are here today to talk about manga. And I read a lot of it in February. February is the shortest month of the year, and I feel like I did the best I could. I got a ton of book talks here, and I'm going to share them with you momentarily. Good range of stuff. Got some romance. We got some RPG-esque titles. We have some fantasy. So I've been doing a lot of reading. Was accepted onto the 2020 New York Public Library Best Books for Teens Committee. So some crossover, so some of the manga I read for the podcast, I'm able to kind of recommend to the other committee members, see if they can read it, and then maybe we can see if we get on the list at the end of the year. So I've been doing a lot of reading this month, and finally, now that February is over, I can finally share with you guys what I've been reading, and hopefully you listen to this episode and you hear something you like during one of the book talks, and maybe you'll go check it out. And just want to let you know, at the end of the episode, I was able to conduct my first interview with my good friend, Tabrija Jones. She is a young adult librarian at the Van Nest branch in the Bronx. So definitely stay tuned for that. I thought it was a pretty good interview. And any librarians, any educators out there who are looking for programming ideas, maybe she can help inspire you. So without further ado, opening is over. Let's start talking about some books. All right, so the first book I would like to talk about today is called The World's Strongest Rearguard, Labyrinth Country's Novice Seeker. It is by Yen Press. The story is by Towa. The art is by Rikizo. And the original character design was by Huika Kazabana. So this is going to be a theme all throughout the episode, but this manga title, which I know is super long, and that seems to be a hallmark of a lot of Yen Press titles, a lot of Seven Seas titles, this manga did start off as a light novel first. A lot of these titles that we're going to talk about today have to do with going to another world, leveling up, statistics, and a lot of them start off as light novels. You know, you've got your So I'm a Spider, So What? You've got That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime. A lot of them start off good light novel reads. And The World's Strongest Rearguard is no exception. Started off as a light novel in Japan back in 2017, and its manga counterpart was released in 2018. And it was in March of 2019 that Yen Press announced it had acquired the rights to the manga's English language edition. Now here we are, nearly a year later, the manga did hit shelves in the United States at the very tail end of January. So what's happening in this manga? Well, we've got a self-confessed corporate slave named Arihito. And when our story begins, he's on a bus going on a company vacation. Also on this bus is his boss, and her name is Kyoka. Kyoka is a giant workaholic. So much so, she's now kind of turned Arihito into one. His life is consumed by his work now thanks to her, and he describes her in the book's opening pages as a work-obsessed monster boss who's actually younger than he is. Wow. So while on this bus, Arihito falls asleep, and when he comes to, he finds out that the bus actually crashed, and he was killed in the accident, and he's now been reincarnated as a seeker in a world known as Labyrinth Country, where monsters run run rampant, and if you don't form up with a faction or join a party to survive in this RPG-esque world, you are not going to make it. And I promise you, this is going to be a theme throughout this podcast. There are a couple other titles like this. Now, in this world, your party is basically your life. It will determine whether you live or whether you die. So that makes the role of every inhabitant of Labyrinth Country that much more important. So Arihito ends up taking on the role of a rearguard, and that's defined as a class dedicated to helping allies from the back lines. Eventually, Arihito discovers in Labyrinth Country that his boss Kyoka was also killed in that crash, and eventually they team up to try and survive this new world that they've got to get adjusted to, and they have to get adjusted to it fast. So while they had some dissension as boss and underling in the real world, in this new one, they're going to have to put all that aside, and they're going to have to try to work together as they never had to before. And that is the world's strongest rearguard, Labyrinth Country's Novice Seeker. Next up is Toilet Bound Hanako-kun. It is by Yen Press, and the story and art are by Aida Iro. So that moniker, Aida Iro, that's actually a combination name for the two creators of this work. Aida is the illustrator of the series, and Iro is the series writer. It's a debut work for this duo. The series debuted in Japan back in 2014, and it was announced back in March of last year that it would receive an anime adaptation, and that adaptation is presently airing this very season, winter of 2020, and it's by Studio, Lurch, I think it's German, I think it stands for Lark. I'm not 100% sure. I have to ask one of my German friends, but Funimation has the licensing rights here. Its first volume of the manga was released digitally back in 2017, and its print version just came out in the final days of January. So maybe it did come out here in 2017. Nevertheless, I read it for the first time this past month, and it's definitely a notable title for sure with the anime airing now, so I would love to book talk it for you today. This story takes place in a school known as Kamome Academy, and the school does have a bit of a reputation. It possesses seven mysteries, and one is more dangerous than the other. And it's been said that if you learn the truth behind all these mysteries, some sort of unknown occurrence will happen. One student in particular, a female named Nene Yashiro, learns about the seventh mystery, and this one is actually a real-life urban legend in Japan. It is the legend of Hanako-san. Hanako-san is allegedly a spirit of a female high school student who haunts a specific toilet in a specific girl's bathroom in Kamome Academy. If summoned, Hanako will grant the student a wish, but at a price. The more advanced the wish is, the larger the price is. So she ends up summoning Hanako on the pretenses that she's looking to fall in love with the upperclassman she currently has a crush on. But when she summons Hanako, she's actually surprised to see that it's a supernatural male. It's not a female at all. And she also finds out his powers are not all that at first. He ends up just kind of giving her a book on love strategies. So she has to make her own wish come true, basically. So she's not impressed at all, but one thing ends up leading to another, and Yashiro winds up turning into a fish. And when she makes a wish to Hanako to turn back into a regular human, he is able to do that, but the price is very high. She's now bound to Hanako. He's made her his assistant. And as a result, Yashiro can now touch Hanako. She wasn't able to do that before. He wasn't corporeal. So that kind of sets up what this series is about. Hanako is now kind of in control of Yashiro. Yashiro is bound to his soul, and it's about their adventures in the cursed school Kamome Academy. So once again, that is Toilet Bound Hanako-kun. All right, next up on our list, we have Living Room Matsunaga-san. It is by Kodansha Comics, and the art and story are by Keiko Iwashita. It's a debut work for this mangaka. The title debuted in Japan back in 2016 in Dessert Magazine. For those of you who aren't aware, that's kind of a shoujo jose manga magazine that Kodansha has been putting out since 1996. Its target market being girls in their late teens, women in their early 20s. So we're going to fast forward now to Anime Expo 2019, and Kodansha announced that Living Room Matsunaga-san will be receiving a print release in early 20, and that is now here. It's been released digitally via Kodansha Comics Digital First, but now I think with more eyes able to view it with a print release, we're still going to book talk it today. More titles to recommend. It's never a bad thing for us librarians. So what's going on in this title? Well, first off, for any fans out there of the books Shortcake Cake and Love and Focus, where living with roommates is at the forefront of the plot, this one will be for you. It's cut from the same cloth. So in Living Room Matsunaga-san, we have a female high schooler named Miko, who is moving out of her parents' house and into her uncle's boarding house, which is basically like a dormitory. The reason for this is because her parents have had to move away for an extended period of time in order to take care of her grandmother, who's not in good health. So now she's going to try and live with her uncle. Upon first making her way to this boarding house, she encounters on the street this male. He's screaming into his cell phone very loud, making a scene. And he notices that Miko has witnessed this outburst. And he begins to stalk her, follow her in the direction she's heading. She's a little freaked out, but she does reach her uncle's house. But so does this guy. And she finds out he is Matsunaga-san from the title. And he's another one of the inhabitants at this boarding house. So they're going to have to live together. She meets other dwellers and she finds out that kind of each of them has their own personality, own quirk. And as time goes by, Miko feels more and more at home in the boarding house. And she also finds herself getting closer and closer to Matsunaga, to the point where she begins to maybe develop feelings for him. And she's not quite sure if this is a prudent idea or not, because Matsunaga does display some pretty wild mood swings, and they kind of hurt her feelings. You know, she gets a little upset when he starts to yell, and, you know, who wouldn't feel that way? So we're going to have to read on to see how this relationship will come to fruition, if it's going to work out. They kind of have different personalities, so this is definitely for the romance fans. Living Room Matsunaga-san. All right, the next title we're going to talk about is called I've Been Killing Slimes for 300 Years and Maxed Out My Level. That is a Yen Press title. The story is by Kisetsu Morita. The original illustrator is Benio, and the manga art is done by Yusuke Shiba. It started off as an online light novel series back in 2016 in Japan. It then got published in print the year later, 2017. And then Yen Press one more year later in 2018 picked up the rights for an English language version of that light novel series. The manga counterpart debuted in Japan in 2017, and now it is making its English language debut here in the States in 2020. It was announced back in October of 2019 via live stream by both Morita and Benio that this series will be receiving an anime adaptation, though no details have been announced yet as to when this will be coming to fruition. So the story centers on a 27-year-old office worker named Azusa Aizawa. She describes herself on the very first page as a corporate slave, lives to work, has given up everything in her life to focus on doing her job to the best of her ability. She states that she has a 50-day work streak at one point in the book. And I thought that was pretty impressive because over the holiday season, I had, in addition to my librarian job, I worked as a cashier at a shoe store, and I racked up 26 work days in a row between the two jobs. And she's doing, I thought that was pretty grueling. And if she could do 50, that's like twice that. Good for her, man. She is a heck of a worker. However, she ends up dropping dead in the middle of a work day for, she's overworked herself to death. An angel appears and it asks if she has any requests for her next life. And she wishes herself to be immortal. And when she awakens, she finds out she's a 17-year-old witch in a fantasy world that resembles an RPG game. And from here on in, Azusa decides she's not going to be the chronic worker she was back in her past life. She's going to be laid back, she's going to take it easy, and be a totally different person. And that happens for the most part, as 300 years go by, but every day during these 300 years, Azusa still shows shades of her past work ethic by never failing to kill an average of 25 low-level slimes a day. And slimes are usually the weakest enemies in gaming, so in the world she's living in, killing 25 low-level slimes is not that, it doesn't take much to do. And as a result, because of her immortality, and because she's doing this, when she does get her level checked in the village, she finds out her level is maxed out, just like the title says. So, like I said, with the immortality and the need, the stringent need to kill these slimes, over the centuries that have gone by, she's turned herself into the strongest person in the world. So now that this secret gets out, people start to approach Azusa, asking her for favors and help that only she can provide with her maxed out strength And the laid-back lifestyle that she's enjoyed in her second life is about to be put to the test. Is she going to be able to keep it going? We'll see. So that is I've Been Killing Slimes for 300 Years and Maxed Out My Level. Next title we're going to talk about, The Hero is Overpowered but Overly Cautious. It's a Yen Press title. The story is by Light Tsuchihi. The original illustrator is Saori Toyota, and the manga art is done by Koyuki. So this title took many steps prior to arriving in an English language manga here in the States. Like the title we just spoke about, this one also started off in a novel format. So before transitioning to light novel, it was an actual novel posted online in Japan on Kadokawa's novel publishing website, Kakuyomu. That was back in 2016. In 2017, the first light novel came out overseas. In November of 2018, a few things happened. So one, it was announced that Overpowered would be receiving an anime adaptation, which it did in the fall of 2019. Funimation had it on simuldub. A number of the episodes were delayed in airing due to production issues, so you take that how you will. Also, in November of 2018, at Anime NYC, Yen Press announced that it would be releasing the English language version of the Overpowered light novels. First one came out in June. And then finally, a month after that book came out at LA's Anime Expo, Yen Press announced it would be releasing the English language manga. That was the same panel that saw the licenses for I've Been Killing Slimes for 300 Years and Maxed Out My Level and Toilet Bound Hanako-kun get announced. So we talked about them earlier in the episode. Same panel announced this English language manga would be coming out here. And you fast forward now, February of 2020, volume one is here. Let's get to the book talk finally. So we have the goddess of healing. Her name is Restarte. And one of her duties is to save the S-ranked world called Gea Brande. So she in turn has to choose a hero to summon to save this particular place. And once that world is saved, then she's going to be able to earn the designation of a full-fledged goddess. Usually the gods assign Restarte these C and D worlds, they're easier jobs. But this time around, since it's an S-ranked world, she is feeling the pressure. She wants to do things as solidly as possible because she really does want to get that designation of a full-fledged goddess. So her thought process is summoning someone from Japan would be the best course of action to take. And she assumes this because she thinks a lot of them play video games, don't understand what's required of them. This mission to save Gea Brande will go smoothly. So while looking through potential applicants, she stumbles across the stats of a Japanese teenager named Seiya. Seiya's statistics are off the charts high. She dubs him as a one in a billion talent and summons him, deciding there's no person better available to save this world. And now once he's summoned and Restarte begins to brief him, she learns that while he is up to the task, he doesn't play video games and he doesn't quite grasp the level of urgency required, and thus goes about his business with an abundance of caution, as the title states. This is much to Restarte's chagrin. Now, keep in mind, there's a lot on the line here. You know, selection of Seiya, it's got to go right. It's an S-ranked world. There's a lot on the line for her if she wants to become a goddess. It hangs in the balance. So Seiya kind of does things that make us readers laugh. It's comedy. He'll use like three superpowered moves to kill off a very weak enemy slime, you know, just to make sure it's actually dead. Or he'll retreat in the middle of a battle to do more training, even though it puts the town's inhabitants in danger. These things turn Restarte into an absolute nervous wreck, even though we're laughing as the reader. And you gotta wonder just how exactly these two now partners with totally different personalities, you know, how are they gonna work together to save this parallel world? So that is The Hero is Overpowered but Overly Cautious. All right, next title we're going to talk about is called Replay. It is a Tokyo Pop title, and the story and art are by Saki Tsukahara. First released in Japan back in 2018 by Gentosha Comics. That is a place that's out of Tokyo Shibuya Ward. This is a standalone boys love manga, so one and done job. It was announced by Tokyo Pop in July of 2019 at San Diego Comic-Con that they licensed this manga for a single volume release in February of 2020. That is now here, so let's talk about the book. So Yuta and Ritsu, they've just retired from their high school baseball team. Yuta is the ball club's ace pitcher, and Ritsu is the team's starting catcher. So they have a very close bond on the field, with Yuta finding that Ritsu's pitch calling behind the plate is the real reason he loves baseball so much and that he's good at it. And now that the boys are about to graduate high school and are applying to different colleges, it's becoming more and more apparent to Yuta that he may have to go to a different college than Ritsu, and he's just not ready to accept that fact. Ritsu has far better grades than Yuta, and he's looking to attend a school named S University. That's a school that will only accept students who excel academically. So meanwhile, Yuta's pitching performances on the diamond have another university offering him an opportunity to attend their school and play on the baseball team on scholarship. But Yuta just isn't sure if that's going to be good enough for him. He has a major, major bond with Ritsu, and he's beginning to think that maybe this affection he holds for his catcher goes beyond the bonds teammates and friends typically have. He thinks maybe there's more at work here. So we, as the reader, you know, we're set to wonder, you know, just how exactly will this relationship between these two boys shake out? Are they going to be able to survive one another without one another? If they do attend separate schools, they have some decisions to make. I do want to warn educators with this book. There is a sex scene in it. It is a little graphic. I might not give it to a teen, but I, obviously, you know, you can read what you want. But as an educator, just be aware. So anyway, that is Replay by Tokyopop. Next title we're going to talk about is called Parham Itan, Tales from Beyond. It is a Tokyopop title, and the story and art are by Kairi Serrano. So this title's license was actually announced at the aforementioned Tokyopop panel at 2019 San Diego Comic-Con, where Replay's license was announced. As for the mangaka, Kairi Serrano, she did have another manga published in English by Tokyopop. This was way back in 2008. It was called Monochrome Factor. That series has wrapped up overseas, but unfortunately it wasn't released in its entirety here. It only saw four volumes translated and published, and that might be due to the big restructuring that Tokyopop underwent that year. I'm not really sure why. But Monochrome Factor also had a 24-episode anime series that did air over the 2008 spring and summer seasons. And now, fast forward 12 years later, let's discuss another one of Serrano's works, Parham Itan. So in this book, we have two students at a sleepaway high school, and they reside in the same dorm, but they're different, they don't run around in the same circles, they're not really aware of one another at the story's outset. We've got Yamagishi, who is involved with the school's boxing club. He's small, but he's super strong, and he has a bit of a chip on his shoulder due to not making the cut at the prior year's boxing invitational. So as a result, he works super, super hard to get better and better at boxing, and his tireless work ethic has really earned the respect of his teammates. On the other hand, there is the tall, slim, brainy Sendo. And Sendo is seen like taking out a lot of library books. He's always thinking, he's always pondering, and one of his hobbies is developing conspiracy theories. The two students' paths, they do collide, and then while walking on the school grounds at night, they encounter a man whose head resembles some sort of flower/Venus flytrap. Pretty soon after that, the school's groundskeeper gets involved, as does a paranormal detective who lets them know that it's true, that there are things that simply can't be explained, that are supernatural. And much to Sendo's delight and to Yamagishi's chagrin, it kind of proves that these conspiracy theories that he's developed are true. But now that they're involved in these supernatural happenings, there really is no turning back, and they're going to have to work together if they want to solve this mystery as to why these beings are appearing on their campus, why are they taking the spot of people's faces, and if they want to live to tell the tale, they'll be working together with one another, even though they're very different. So that is Parham Itan, Tales from Beyond. Next title, Let's Kiss in Secret Tomorrow. It was released digitally by Kodansha Comics, and the story and art are by Uri Sugata. It's a debut work for this creator, and on one of the final pages of the manga, it's a thank you page from her, where she talks about her husband and her 2.5-year-old son and how he keeps her super busy in addition to the work she's doing on her manga, so I thought that was pretty cool to see. This title was one of the titles that Kodansha announced at the panel it held at Anime NYC with Vertical, and it was announced that they'd be licensing it digitally, and that panel included three titles that we covered in our first episode, and those were That Blue Summer, GE Good Ending, and Mabusasa. So if you wanted the book talks on those, double back to the prior episode, please. But let's talk about Uri Sagata's Let's Kiss in Secret Tomorrow. So what's going on here? So the story is told from the point of view of a first-year female high school student named Saya. And she is a self-described gloomy nerd. And also introduced on the opening page is the quote-unquote popular kid, Yuto, and he's a male first year in that same school. And despite these very contrasting descriptions, they're actually a couple, so they're with one another. However, they're keeping this a secret from the rest of the student body and nearly everyone else. Only person who knows is another nerd girl who went to their previous school, so she's aware, but nobody else is. And there's actually a couple reasons why they want to keep this relationship secret. One of them, the pair sets of parents had some sort of tiff at a PTA meeting, so they both know their parents would not approve of their kids dating one another. That's a fact. Also, let's backtrack just a teeny bit here. So before they arrived in their new school, they actually bonded with one another in middle school since they both love the same MMO game. Then came the summer before their first year of high school, which is now, and Yuto decided to surprise Saya by undergoing a major transformation looks-wise. So he sheds his glasses and he gets a more trendy hairstyle from his brother, who's a hairstylist in Tokyo. So now that they're entering high school, a lot of Saya and Yuto's fellow first-year female classmates, they take note of Yuto's good looks, and they either want to date Yuto themselves, or they go about belittling Yuto's rumored girlfriend, saying things such as, oh, I think I'll snatch him up for myself. So this applies principally for one attractive female classmate named Takano. Takano really is into Yuto, and she just lays it on thick to Saya, like, I want this boy, you know, I should say. But she doesn't know that Saya is actually Yuto's girlfriend. So anyway, as a result, Saya tells Yuto that it's best if they pretend while they're in school that they're not a couple, because she's a little fearful at the wrath that, you know, may come her way if the other girls find out she's got the school's new hunk on lockdown. So their relationship basically becomes one that's solely online, be it through their MMO game or by voice chat, which is kind of like this Skype thing that they put in the book. They don't actually call it Skype, but you can tell it's what it is. When this facade becomes difficult to keep up and the two really feel the urge to take their relationship to the next step and be closer to one another, you know, hence the title, it really makes you wonder just how long they're going to be able to keep this act up. The foreword from creator Yuri Sugata says, this is a story about reverse inventing yourself, which is kind of what these two are doing. Saya develops this nerdier persona to try and become someone the rest of the student body would never believe Yuto would go for. It's kind of to bolster the guys that the two have going on. So there's definitely a lot of secrets in this book, and it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. So that is called Let's Kiss in Secret Tomorrow. Next up, we are going to talk about Given. This is by Sublime Manga, and the story and art are by Natsuki Kizo. It's a debut work by this creator. It first circulated in 2013 in a bi-monthly Japanese manga titled Cherry Plus that focuses on yaoi titles. From there, it became what is now a 5-episode audio drama. I haven't listened to this myself, but I've read that the 5th CD release... And this takes place in like an audiobook format. So if those of you in the library who, you know, know about books on CDs, that's what an audio drama is. The 5th CD actually came out this past week, where the 4th CD came out all the way back in November of 2018. So it's a big gap between releases. This title has been out there and most fans of manga are probably aware of it thanks to the anime adaptation. Received a lot of good reviews. It came out during the summer of 2019. It's licensed here in the States by Crunchyroll. It was only 11 episodes in length and did not have a lot of closure. And that's because there's going to be a film coming out in May of this year produced by Blue Lynx that will act as a sequel to the anime. So a lot of fans may already be aware of what Given is about, but if you're not, here is the book talk. So there's this one odd duck at this particular high school. His name is, he's got a long name, Uenoyama. Best I can do. So he's at this high school. First and foremost, he was huge into music, but he's kind of soured on it, honestly, as of late. He's finding life pretty boring as a whole. He was also into basketball, but he just has no desire to play any longer with his friends. All he really wants to do is go up to the secret staircase he's found in his school during lunch hours, go to sleep, try to whittle the rest of the day away. So one day, as he's about to do just that, he finds another student in his secret spot who has a guitar that has strings that are rusting and they're dying, they're breaking. And this student is Mafuyu, who doesn't have the first idea about guitars. He actually thinks because the strings are about to break that the whole guitar is like junk. But he is actually a highly talented singer who has a beautiful voice, and he wants Uenoyama to teach him the guitar. And Uenoyama suggests he join the school's light music club instead. He doesn't want to teach him. Until he discovers that Mafuyu has this incredible voice. And because Mafuyu's voice is so touching, it kind of reignites the passion for music in Uenoyama, who's in a band with two other guys who may or may not have feelings for one another. And that's another storyline altogether. So now Mafuyu is both learning how to play this guitar he's in possession of while simultaneously getting involved in this band. In addition, there appear to be rumors flying amongst the school about Uenoyama and Mafuyu. Some of them are about past misfortunes that have occurred. And in the end, it's this really compelling coming-of-age story that has music at its center. Do want to warn, though, there is a disclaimer on the Comixology page. That's where I read it. It says, this series is rated adults only, and then disclaimer in big capital letters, graphic sexuality. Now, there is none of that in the first volume. It is pretty clean. It's clean, you know, it's completely clean. But this series may evolve into something with graphic sexuality going forward. So just a heads up. But this is Given by Sublime Manga. Next up, A Man and His Cat. It's by Square Enix Manga, and the story and art are by Umi Sakurai. This originally started as a webcomic. It's been serialized since February of 2018 on the website pixiv.net. It has the first four volumes on there in Japanese, as this past month finally saw its English language debut hit shelves thanks to Square Enix Manga. It ranked as a runner-up in the best web manga category in 2018's Tsuginiku Manga Awards, which roughly translates to the Next Manga Awards. And if you haven't heard of them, you can check out its Japanese website. It's tsugimanga.jp. So tsugimanga.jp. A Google translation on there describes these awards as User Participation Manga Awards. And the website's translation also states that they will accept entries from the users who think that the next manga will come next and select the most popular works from among the submitted works as nominated works. Then users will be voted for the nominated works and the grand prize will be decided. And that's obviously not perfect English, that is a Google translation, but these awards are clearly from manga readers overseas, and they obviously enjoyed this title enough that it ended up as a runner-up in a field of 19. So definitely a notable title over in Japan, and now it's finally made its way here in English. So the book's main human character, is an older gentleman named Kanda. Kanda is a piano teacher who lives alone. He's a widow, and his kids are older and out of the house. And he's clearly not happy about his living arrangements. He's very lonely, so he decides to do something about it. And that's where our main animal character enters. It is a cat that is going to end up with the name Fukumaru. And he resides in a pet store right now. Fukumaru is, as described by the bulk of the book's characters, not an attractive-looking cat. He has sort of a funny face. He's overweight. And as a result, a lot of the pet store customers pass by his cage without even any thought at all as to adopting him. And you can say that the pet store employees are kind of accepting of the fact that for the most part, he's not going to get adopted. There's one female employee there who does have feelings for the soon-to-be-named Fukumaru that are kind of warm. But in the book's opening pages, Kanda does come into the store to adopt and later name Fukumaru. And that's the main narrative of this story. It is a slice of life story with Fukumaru adjusting to living now with a human owner. And Kanda is now adjusting to the quirks that come with owning a cat. Things such as litter box training, how cats deal with loud noises, and how cats deal with getting their fur wet. Those are just some of the things that you'll see in this book. Everyone is learning and adjusting in this title. A lot of Baby talk comes from Fukumaru, honestly. So he replaces a lot of syllables in his speech with the word meow. So if you're into the cute factor like that, maybe this is a title for you. Fans of cat manga, there's a lot of it. They'll like this. I know there's a lot of Instagram pages that have cat photos. So I think there's definitely an audience for this book, no doubt about it. And that is A Man and His Cat. Next up, Beyond the Clouds, The Girl Who Fell from the Sky. It's released by Kodansha Comics, and the story and art are by a female mangaka named Nike. It's actually a French comic, which is interesting. This work has been described on the book's back cover as a dreamlike odyssey that's part Studio Ghibli, part Final Fantasy. And in the back of the book interview, it's kind of easy to see why. Kodansha interviews Nike, and Nike says that she enjoys playing video games, specifically Kingdom Hearts, and she especially enjoyed reading as a kid video game strategy guides. She does have art in her blood, as her uncle was an illustrator, and her father, while not in a sense of creating art for storybooks and manga, he did utilize his artistic skills in his work. He draws plans for a railroad company. So Nike drew tons of sketches and tons of fanzines in her youth. And then even after graduating college, she returned to the classroom setting by enrolling in design school. And she ended up working in an art supply shop. So we clearly have someone here who loves art and loves creating, and it really shows in this beautifully drawn title. She finally states in the back of the book interview that the idea for this title, Beyond the Clouds, it came to her when she was listening to a track from the Final Fantasy X soundtrack called A Fleeting Dream. She said that the song's melancholy melody is what ended up inspiring the scenery for the story. So, like I said, it's part Final Fantasy, part Studio Ghibli, and maybe a little Kingdom Hearts is in there. There's probably something for everybody in this title. So, it's about our protagonist is a boy named Theo. So, he's the main character. He's living as an orphan in a rather polluted, steampunk-esque city known as the Yellow Town. Theo is a huge reader. He loves fantasy tales with heroes and dragons and dreamed when he was really young of a better life that was more exciting and possessed more adventure. But unfortunately, it just didn't happen for him. Theo now is of teenage age when the story begins. And really, all that his love for reading has gotten him is impaired eyesight. He works as a mechanic and he's really good with tools and building. He likes to tinker and he really likes to visit this trash heap in Yellowtown. He calls it the Island of Dreams. And he goes there to try and find new things and parts that he can fiddle with, during his invention sprees. However, upon his latest visit to the trash heap, Theo finds an unconscious one-winged girl named Mia. Her other wing has possibly been ripped out. I'm not really sure. Nevertheless, it's missing. It's not there. So upon bringing her back home and nursing her back to health, he finds out she cannot recollect anything of her past. And thus, Theo takes it upon himself to try and get her back on her feet or get her back in the air, so to speak. But with Theo having the feeling that he's being watched ever since coming into contact with Mia, things are going to pick up considerably in his life, and he might just get that dreamlike, fanciful storybook existence that he's always dreamt of. So that is Beyond the Clouds, The Girl Who Fell from the Sky. Next up, Citrus Plus. It is by Seven Seas Entertainment, and the story and art are by Sabu Rota. So Citrus Plus is seeing its physical release in February. It was released digitally back in November. I do want to point out that Citrus Plus is a spin-off of its predecessor, Citrus. It does feature the main characters from Citrus, so you likely won't be able to follow Citrus Plus without having first read Citrus. So in that event, let's shine the spotlight on an older series here. And again, that's not really what we're going to do a lot of the time here in Manga Monthly, but I think it's okay to step out of your comfort zone once in a while. So let's talk about Citrus. Citrus is a 10-volume Yuri series. And it's also put out by Seven Seas. In North America, its first volume came out in December of 2014, and its final volume came out this past year in July. It did appear on the New York Times bestseller list for manga 5 times alone in 2015, according to Anime News Network. It also had a 12-episode anime series that ran during the winter 2018 season, and that was licensed here in the States by Crunchyroll. And now it has its sequel series, Citrus Plus, here for us to read. But let me do a little book talk on Citrus. So in Citrus's first volume, the storyline kind of reminded me of an anime that I also brought up in the prior episode called Domestic Girlfriend. And in that one, two single parents remarry one another, and their kids, who are classmates, now they become step siblings. Well, sort of a similar premise in Citrus. Female high school student Yuzu's mother is remarrying, and as a result, she's now going to have a new stepsister. Her stepsister, though, it ends up being the new school's student council president, Mei, who does run a tight ship. Yuzu is very free and easy. She's very unconcerned about the consequences of her actions, like something like dyeing her hair. As long as she's having a fun time, that is really all that matters to her. So this causes her to not only get herself in trouble with the school's chairman, who is Mei's grandfather, but to butt heads with Mei herself. And during one argument that the two have, Mei unexpectedly kisses Yuzu, which then turns her whole world upside down. So now feelings may be starting to develop. There is also another storyline in Citrus where Mei, despite trying to uphold all the rules of her school as a student council president would, Mei's romantically involved with a teacher who is after Mei's family fortune. So there's a lot going on in Citrus. It was a pretty popular series, and now that it's receiving its sequel, Citrus Plus, I guess it's kind of back in the spotlight. So check it out, Citrus. Next up, we are going to talk about Kase-san and Yamada. It's a Seven Seas Entertainment title, and the story and art are by Hiromi Takashima. So this one is a slightly complicated case right here. Before the release of Kase-san and Yamada, there have been 5 prior releases in the Kase-san and series. They started in Japan in 2012 and started receiving English language publications in 2017. So 1 through 5, their titles are Kase-san and Morning Glories, Kase-san and Bento, Kase-san and Shortcake, Kase-san and An Apron, and Kase-san and Cherry Blossoms. So that brings us to the book we're going to cover in just a few moments, Kase-san and Yamada. So while it receives the same naming pattern after one of the book's main characters, Kase, the sixth volume has now included the second main character, Yamada's name in the title. And another interesting note, this is the only volume out of the five that specifically includes volume one after the title. So if you look at this book's cover, it says both Kase-san and Book Six. So it's Book Six in the Kase-san and series. But it also specifically says Volume One. So Volume One, like I said, Kase-san and Morning Glories, like that's technically the first book of this series. But this book is known as Kase-san and Yamada Volume One, even though it's a Book Six. And I know I'm jumping around a lot, but when I looked on Goodreads, it lists Kase-san and Yamada Volume Two as the series' next release, and that's not until November. There's no cover art on that book's listing yet, but I'm gonna suspect it will say Book Seven on there, in addition to including Volume Two under the Kase-san and Yamada title. So I just thought that was interesting. It's kind of like the series is both beginning and continuing at the same time, which is a unique situation. And as I'm going to state in the book talk coming up, the new life scenario that Kase and Yamada find themselves in, maybe it does constitute a new series name. They're both new students at separate universities. So this takes place in Tokyo. On one hand, we have Yamada, who is a bright, bubbly girl. I guess you can kind of describe her as having a very sunny personality. And this description befits her pretty well, since at her women's university, she studies horticulture. So she is frequently seen by other members of the student body watering plants, tending to the crops, tending to the flowers. That is her jam. And on the other hand, we have Kase, who also attends another university in Tokyo, but this one has a focus on sports. She's described by Yamada as a boyish girl, but she's very beautiful and gets stares everywhere she goes. Kase is involved with the school's track team, so that keeps her very busy. And while Yamada is occupied with her university matters, Kase is involved with her track team. So they're both pretty busy and they don't get to see each other that much. They're both in Tokyo, but their schools are not right around the corner from one another. The train ride, which includes a transfer, it takes up to 50 minutes to get to one school to the other. It's not the worst travel arrangement that was ever drawn up, but it's not ideal for the couple either. So this book throws a couple of wrenches into their relationship, in addition to the just being too busy and the travel. Yamada is able to make a new friend at her school, and it's like a friend that doesn't know she's in the same-sex relationship, and she wants her to accompany her on a gokan, which is basically a group blind date, and that's something that Kase is not on board with at all. In addition, though, Kase has a very attractive female roommate who makes Yamada feel a little insecure. So, again, these two girls, they have obstacles that they're going to have to overcome in their semi-long-distance relationship. But they do state that they've only been going out a handful of months and, you know, they're just not on the most secure of ground as a couple just yet. So this story is going to be one where they try to overcome the odds and make things work out for the two of them. So that is Kase-san and Yamada. Next up, My Androgynous Boyfriend. It is a Seven Seas Entertainment title, and the story and art are by Tameko. So it's a debut work from this creator, which started out in February of 2018 overseas. It was serialized in a magazine over in Japan known as Feel Young, and that magazine is published by Shōdansha, and its target market primarily consists of women who are older than teenage age. It's finally made its way here, and at Seven Seas Entertainment's panel at Anime Expo 2019, it was announced that the company had licensed the series for an English language release. And as a matter of fact, this was the same panel where the previous title we just sort of covered, Citrus Plus, it also had its English language license announced. So let's talk about My Androgynous Boyfriend. Let's start by talking about the character on the cover of the book. He is the androgynous boyfriend. His name is Meguru. He has a very, very feminine appearance. If you didn't know he was a boyfriend, you would totally think he was a female character just looking at his photo. He works for a modeling agency and he has a lot of followers on his Instagram and is constantly seen throughout his day checking out new clothes, you know, getting his nails taken care of, and just generally doing things to better his already flawless appearance. Now, don't let this description from me fool you. I may have made Meguru sound like he's self-centered, he's superficial, but that's actually not the case at all. He cares and considers his girlfriend Wako very, very much. And a lot of the stuff that he does to better himself aesthetically, he does it for her. However, Wako does have a very taxing job. She works for a publishing company and she's very busy most of the time. And when she sees how supportive Meguru is of her and sees all the nice things he does for her, when she does finally get off the clock, you know, she wonders if she's pulling her weight in the relationship. So somehow these two are going to have to make their relationship work, despite the both of them having as different lifestyles as possible. It's a slice of life romantic comedy story, and it is called My Androgynous Boyfriend. Next title we're going to talk about is called Cooking with Wild Game. It was released digitally by the J Novel Club. The story is by Kai Hyo, and the art is by Kochimo. So, like others we've spoken about during this episode, this one did start out as a light novel. The original creator's name was the acronym EDA. The light novel started out back in 2015, and it was announced at the end of 2018 by the J Novel Club that they would begin releasing these light novels here in the United States. And by the way, while the J Novel Club has only been around since 2016, I'm a pretty big fan. I like Animeda, I like Kokoro Connect, so I'm a pretty big fan of the titles they've licensed. I really enjoyed checking out their table at Anime NYC, so shout out to them. But yes, so now J Novel Club has both the light novels and the manga of Cooking with Wild Game under their banner. And I read this title over Comixology, so let's get to the book talk. So we have a 17-year-old boy named Asta. And Asta helps out at his father's little restaurant. He's very similar, actually, to Soma in Food Wars. He's great, you know, he's got some significant culinary skill. He's a great cook. But problems begin when all of a sudden some rough and tumble developers, they want to take over their eatery and expand their spot, which is next door. And they end up sending a warning message to Asta's father by running him over with a miniature truck. He survives, but he's bound for the time being to a hospital bed. So while Asta is visiting his father, he gets a call that the restaurant is up in flames, and it's likely arson committed by these developers. So Asta's father asks him to try and salvage this one carving knife, which for some reason he values it extraordinarily, more than his own life. So Asta rides his bicycle back as fast as he can. He ends up going into this burning building. He does salvage the knife, but then, unsure as to why, he ends up on an entirely different planet where he's captured by a warrior girl named Aifa. Aifa is very curt, very brusque, and she's not happy that she now has to show Asta the ropes of this new planet, has to show her settlement, her clan. But maybe the one thing that can keep Asta alive and on Aifa's good side is the fact that he can cook. And he's got this knife that his father swore by. He can't do much else in this world, but with Aifa being a terrible cook, he steps in and shows her how to make superior tasting food, and she is on board. She agrees that she wants to learn how to cook from him, and then the two begin to bond. So again, that is Cooking with Wild Game. All right, next up, we're going to talk about The Dorm of Love and Secrets. It was released digitally by Kodansha Comics, and the story and art are by Nikki Asada. So this is a manga that's done by the artist who illustrated the Sound Euphonium novel series. So wow. Those novels are available here via Yen Press, and of course, no conversation about Sound Euphonium would be complete without mentioning its very popular animated counterparts. So Sound Euphonium had two seasons. One was in 2015 and one was in 2016, and Nikki Asada was the character designer. It also has three films. Two of them are summaries of those two seasons, and the third film is a continuation. So it's a pretty well-known work by Kyoto Animation, and now Ms. Asada has this new manga of hers that was released digitally by Kodansha. What is it about? So let's see. So this story, it takes place in a high school that was created 5 years ago, prior to the story's start. It took two other high schools and merged them to create this high school. So one of them was an elite high school where the smartest kids went and they did nothing but study. But the other one was notorious for its laid-back nature, where the students were actually able to enjoy their youth and not have to stress out over test results. Well, now that these schools have been merged, the students who associated with the former school are known as high-class students, and the ones associated with the latter are known as no-class students. And since they have to share the building with one another, there's definitely dissension within the school walls. All right, so at this point, let me introduce you to Asahi. So Asahi is a female student at this school, and she definitely fits in with the no-class student body. Doesn't do terribly well academically, but is, all in all, she's pretty carefree and merry despite her poor GPA. She doesn't really care. So one night, when her home catches fire, things are going to change for her. Initially, she was a commuter student who lived with her mom. She now has no choice but to move into the high-class student dormitory. Her nearest relative is an aunt who lives 2.5 hours away and doesn't make for a very ideal commute to school. So Asahi's mom goes to live with the aunt, and Asahi gets some strings pulled, and now she's in the really strict high-class student dorm. There are a ton of rules, so it really doesn't suit her personality at all. However, she does encounter a mysterious male student named Yokaze, who she sees breaking the dorm's curfew, climbing through windows to get out, and she is both attracted to his good looks, and she's also intrigued as to why he's behaving the way he is, despite being a high-class student. He's kind of truant. On top of all that, there's the fact that she's a low-class student living in the high-class dorm, and that's not a known thing to the rest of the school. And if it gets out, it's going to cause a big time scandal, apparently. So there's a lot happening in this one. A lot is on the line. If these secrets do get out, that is the dorm of love and secrets. Next up, a side character's love story. It's by North Stars Pictures, and story and art are by Akane Tamura. This manga began in 2017, and it's still ongoing in Japan. It's published over there in a magazine called Monthly Comic Zenon. That is a magazine that caters primarily to younger adult men. The magazine is published by North Stars Pictures in tandem with Tokuma Shoten every month. And now North Stars Pictures has brought this title to digital platforms here in the US for us to be able to read as well. So what is it about? So if anyone read last year's popular Viz Media release, Komi Can't Communicate, this one is really, really similar. So the main character is not a high schooler like Komi was. This girl is in college. So the girl's name is Nobuko Tanaka. She does appear to have some sort of communication disorder, much like Komi. She describes herself in the beginning as very meek, doesn't handle attention too well. She gets very, very nervous when it comes to talking to other people, and she just doesn't feel comfortable doing it whatsoever. She has a lot of quirks, and they're outlined all throughout the book. She admits that, as the title character suggests, a side character. But she's the main character of this book. So circumstances are going to force her hand, and she's going to have to try to get past this. So she gets a job in a supermarket as a cashier and has a few coworkers who are about to make an impact in her life. So one of her coworkers, would be the female coworker, Abe. Abe is very, very loud and automatically wants to be her friend, which is honestly a little jarring for Tanaka. She didn't accept friends so easily. And the other one, the other coworker that's going to make an impact on her life is a male coworker named Irie. Now, when Tanaka was new at the supermarket, Irie didn't mind her meek attitude at all, and he wasn't put off by it or anything. He showed her kindness, helped teach her things to make her a better worker, and as a result, Tanaka absolutely has developed feelings for him, but due to her communication woes, she just doesn't know how to express these feelings, and us as the reader are simply drawn in as to how she's going to overcome her weakness and convey her feelings to this kind boy. So that is a side character's love story. All right, so the last title we're going to talk about is called Downfall. It is put out by Viz Media, and the story and art are by Inio Asano. All right, so for those of you who have never read anything by Inio Asano, first know his work is quite fascinating, I think. I think he's best described as a realist. His works are pretty practical for the most part, and a lot of them feature scenarios that are definitely not the most rosy ones you're ever going to find in literature, and I think there's something to be said for that. Think of it this way. Life is not always going to consist of ups. If you go on a lot of people's social media pages, you'd think that is the case, and as a result, I could see why a lot of people want to detox themselves when it comes to social media platforms. They can drive people to depression, you know, seeing other people appear to only have happy times, or maybe you yourself are not satisfied with where you're at in life, maybe you're going through something. So the way people portray themselves on social media, that's just not real life to me. You know, there's going to be a lot of downs in life as well. Everybody has them. And that really resonates in a lot of Asano's works, and Downfall is no different. He does have a number of other works that Viz has published here in the States, and all of them seem to deal with real-life problems. You've got Solanin, which features recent college graduates involved with music, but they don't have any direction on what to do with their lives. There's Goodnight Pun Pun, which has a lot of themes that come with living in a broken home. And this one's not really real life-ish. It's more science fiction, but I do enjoy it. It's called Dead Dead Demons, Dead Destruction. And I know a lot of syllables in that one, but that is the title. It deals with a group of young adults living in Tokyo and going on about their business. However, there's this enormous flying saucer hovering over the city without any explanation. And these kids don't know if they're going to die tomorrow. They don't know if humanity is on the brink of invasion or obliteration, but they just have to go about their business because, you know, what else can they do? So anyway, Inio Asano's works are pretty thought-provoking and they're real. And I think they're, even though they're not the most merry of books, they're still pretty good reads. And I think this sort of plays into what Downfall is about. So in Downfall, the main character is a manga artist named Kaoru. And he's just had a successful series wrap up. It's over now. And it's now time for him to come up with the next big series, you know, the next moneymaker. And he's having a lot of trouble, you know, coming up with that series, honestly. And that's based primarily on where his mindset is when it comes to the manga business. So the thing is, Kaoru absolutely hated his successful series. You know, it wasn't something he was a fan of at all. He would never have read it. But he created it due to the fact that he knows what manga fans want and he knows what would sell. But yeah, he's just not happy at all. He's not a happy person. You know, when you look at him and you see where his mindset is, you know, he's having a very complicated time coming up with the next series that's going to be as successful as his last one. On top of that, he's in the process of a divorce and he's receiving comfort in the company of prostitutes. So things are just not really going well. He's kind of a mess and he can't really get a hold of his editor to ask for advice. No progress is being made. You know, how is this story going to shake out for Kaoru? I do want to note this book has an 18 plus rating and for good reason, it does deserve its 18 plus rating. There is one scene that features an attempted rape. So definitely reader beware, educator beware. This book is more for adults than it is for teenagers. Just keep that in mind before picking it up, opening it up, and reading it. So again, that is Viz Media's Downfall. And that is it for the book segment of our episode. All right, so I am talking to my good friend, fellow librarian from the Bronx, Tabrija Jones. She is at the Van Ness Library. Tabrija, thank you for doing this. You're my first interview. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Nope, not a problem. You're definitely doing me a favor, so I really appreciate it. I was wondering if you would talk a little bit about your library, Van Ness. How long have you been there? Anything particular you want to say about it?
Okay. I was at a previous location in the Bronx. I've been at this location for about 3 months. Mm-hmm. So overall in the New York Public Library, I've been working there for 4 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How's your teen population?
The teen population is really good. Yeah. In the past 3 months, I have noticed that they really love manga and anime and graphic novels. So I've always been having conversations with them, like discussing, oh, what new manga do you want to see in the collection? And anytime I do a staff pick or that's like newly released, they always immediately pick it up. So that's always been uplifting to have.
Okay, fantastic. Any programs you want to highlight? Anything that you, maybe not at this branch, another branch in the past?
Like bi-weekly, I have an anime and manga program.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We show Crunchyroll episodes. We have an outreach Crunchyroll account with them. So I show episodes from them. And then coming in the summer, I'm going to have a library con, which I did at my previous location, and I'm going to do it again at Van Ness.
That's so awesome. Yeah. So mm-hmm. It's just that if any educators out there who are listening, you know, they want to maybe get some programming ideas. Mm-hmm. I know you used to work at Barnes & Noble.
Yes.
So do you have any funny stories you would like to share?
Oh, God. Oh, so many. One time a person came in asking if we sold hammers.
Oh.
Yeah. another time, someone came in asking if we sold Barbie dolls, and like, no, we don't sell Barbie dolls. Like, but you sell it on your website. It's like, that's our website. Mm-hmm. So yeah, gotta go on our website. We don't sell Barbie dolls in Barnes & Noble. It was an interesting experience mm-hmm. working at Barnes & Noble. I learned what to do and what not to do. Right. And it really, excel in my like library display ideas because that's where I get it all from. I know how to display books and to attract customers or patrons. Okay. So people would be able to like buy or to check out the books and stuff like that.
All right. So yeah. Since you've dabbled in both the bookstore world and the mm-hmm. library world, mm-hmm. do you think that the two are able to coexist, you know, with one another? What do you have any thoughts on that? Or
I believe they are able to coexist mm-hmm. because we are both institutions that are trying to get people to read. Mm-hmm. And either way, it's either for free or you have to pay a fee. We're still like, our methods are still the same, and you're able to coexist because buying books is still a privilege because with prices of books, they're still pretty high. So books are, libraries are still able to like be there to provide, to close that gap a little bit. So people who are able to afford books, they can go to a bookstore.
Okay.
An independent bookstore, preferably.
Yes. We have a lot of them in New York. So,
yeah, an independent bookstore, preferably. And for those who are not able to afford books, then they can go to the library. And then sometimes people just want a quiet place to read. Mm-hmm. And libraries can provide that because a lot of bookstores are trying to steer away from that like coffee style because they want people to buy stuff.
Okay.
So libraries are able to like, you know, be there to provide that quiet place that people strive for when they're reading.
Of course. And libraries have so many other resources aside mm-hmm. from their books. Yeah. I do think that, you know, the two are able to coexist.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about your experience with, I guess, graphic novels, manga in general. Now, I met you last year on the committee and we mm-hmm. became good friends. So mm-hmm. how did you first get into, you know, graphic novels and manga?
I started reading graphic novels when I started becoming a young adult librarian.
Okay.
I never really read comics when I was a kid. I didn't see the appeal. So when I, tried to get the kids and teens to read like prose novels, they didn't want to. And then I started seeing that they were reading graphic novels. So I was like, well, okay. This is like the highest circulating things in my branch. Yeah. Let me see what is it all about. And then I started reading like a lot of them. I started bit by bit. Like, I think the first major comic I read was like Miss Marvel, the Miss Marvel series.
Yes.
I devoured that and was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then, so that was pretty cool to do. The manga was hard because especially since it was in a different format, it was from right to left instead of left to right. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. So I started small. So I started with a story that I was already familiar with. So I started with manga classics.
Yes.
So, which is like a huge educational resource. If you have kids and teens who don't like classics, manga classics are like the best way to get them interested. So I started with those and I was like, okay, I'm getting the hang of this. And like, I'm seeing the appeal. And then I started reading some mangas that, some of my teens were interested. Some of the people that I asked who read mangas a lot, it's like, okay, which ones do you think is a good one? And they suggested titles to me. And I started with those. Some were hit and miss. But then I think it was really last year when I met you that I started like...
Oh, thank you.
I started really diving into it because okay. they were like, you showed me a world, like a different world of manga, and it was like, whoa, this is amazing. And it's just like, I think last year is when it really, really took off. Like, I read a lot more graphic novels and a lot of manga. It was just like an amazing experience.
Oh, well, thank you for putting me over. I know you've kind of incorporated them in your work because with the Library Con mm-hmm. Last year, you did that at your other branch. Was it Sedgwick?
Yes, Sedgwick.
Mm-hmm. I was there to help you out, and that was mm-hmm. a lot of fun. So I guess it's kind of turned into programming, which is always nice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also nice to hear that the kids kind of got you into it. So it's awesome. Are there any other favorite graphic novels, manga you want to talk about aside from Miss Marvel?
Let's see. Oh, Magus of the Library.
Yes.
Absolutely love. Yeah. Yes. Kino's Journey. I know you didn't like it, but I liked it. Yuri is My Job. I really like it. I find it funny.
Listen, anybody can like whatever they want to like. I believe that. Yeah.
I find it funny. It's so cute. The Golden Compass, the one I think was the first one that was really heartwarming and touching. Mm-hmm. There's just so many. Snow White with the red hair. Mm-hmm. For the Kid I Saw in My Dreams.
Yes, that's a good one. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Kay Sande.
For the Kid I Saw in My Dreams. Yes, I love that one.
That was a title that made the 2019 New York Public Library Best Books for Teens list. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a good one for sure. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. So now let's talk a little bit about your blog. Okay. I want to make sure I get the title right because it's a little long. It is Cup of Tea. Why don't you say it? Go ahead. I'll let her say it.
So. Cup of Tea with That Book, Please.
Yes, yes. Okay. Was it hard to start in the beginning, a blog from scratch?
Yes. It was hard to start and also hard, and it's still hard, to keep up to date with it because there's just so many other people doing similar blogs about books. So it's like you're entering a market that's already cluttered. Mm-hmm. So, it is hard, but then when you're doing something that you enjoy and love, you kind of just like put it aside and then you just focus on that. And if you put a lot of passion into it, it just nothing else really matters.
I agree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it all sounds good. What is the platform you use for your blog?
WordPress.
And do you like WordPress?
I love WordPress. Easy to use? Yeah, it's very easy to use. It's very user-friendly. It's a good platform to... for beginners. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know a lot about coding, it does provide a part if you do know some coding that you can put your own code in. But if you don't, like me, it's like very good. It has like block editors. This is like different tabs for you to use. It's very user friendly.
And are you the only person operating your blog? Or...
Yes. Wow. At the moment, yes.
That's amazing. So was it just like simple passion for books that made you want to create it, or?
Yes. I was working at Columbia University, and I was working in their rare books and manuscript library, and I didn't have a lot of time or the tendency to talk about books as much as I wanted to. So I was like, why don't I just start a blog? Mm-hmm. So I can talk about books and do book reviews and like, you know, little snippets about everyday book life and other things as well. I don't get into politics as much because I try to take a break from that because sometimes we need a break from all the crap that's going around in the world.
Of course.
And books provide that escape. So, but sometimes if it does involve books, I'll talk about it.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how long ago did you begin it?
Wow. I want to say 7 years.
Oh, wow. That's a long time. That's unbelievable. You know, the fact that you were able to persevere, you know, like you said, it's a cluttered thing you're trying to do. And I'm sure have there been times you wanted to maybe like give up? It's just too hard.
Because like you feel like life gets to you. Right. And then sometimes if you're working in a stressful job, like sometimes our job can be stressful.
Absolutely.
You just feel like so downtrodden. It's like, I don't want to do anything else. Mm-hmm. I give up and stuff. But then sometimes it's just like having that blog there is just like a nice break to have. And I think that's why I still try to persevere and try to work on it because I just want to keep keep talking about books. Even though at this new branch I have more of an opportunity, I still would like to do it more, and I think this blog provides me with that.
Excellent. Yeah. And how can listeners find your blog, you know, in case they wanted to check it out? Because I love it. I think it looks so professional. So how can they find it?
It's called Cup of Tea with That Book, Please. So it's www.cupoftewiththatbookplease.com.
Amazing. They can find you on Facebook?
Yes. There's a Facebook page as well. And you can like me on Facebook. And all the posts get sent to that Facebook page and also on my Twitter feed, which is Cup of Tea Jones, I believe. That's That's really bad. I should know my handle.
But they will be able to find it. Yeah. I'll definitely post the link. I think this first interview for my podcast was outstanding. Thank you so much for doing this. Taking the time out of your day to help me out. I owe you one for sure. And I just want to thank everybody for listening to this past episode. We'll hope you guys have a great March. I hope the weather warms up a little bit. And all right, we'll see you next month. So thank you guys very much for tuning in. Bye-bye now.